last week, I talked quite extensively about the, quote, two trees in the garden, right? And when we think about that situation, there is an awful lot of information that is wrapped up into that those two statements. You remember what the word garden means? Enclosure or a hedge. Something to keep something out or to keep something in. And we know from the third chapter that there was a gate. So he had to enter in through that gate, right? And we will talk about that more in detail when we get into chapter 3. But right now, we talked about the two trees, right? One of the trees had knowledge, quote, end of quote, and the other tree had life, quote, end of quote, correct? All right, so now, here we have, because see, we as human beings are trying to figure out what would have happened if. So, let's play a scenario here. In Genesis, it's very fascinating there, when the Creator said, in the midst of the garden was the tree of life and the tree of knowledge, right? Now, let's take a scenario. That very statement of and by itself should tell you something. And I asked you last week, I want you to think about this for a moment. Suppose Adam never took, or Eve never took, of the tree of knowledge. Would they die? What would you have an indication that they would die? They were restricted from taking, quote, one of the trees.
Right.
If they did not take of the other tree, called the tree of life, would they die? The statement of and by itself tells you that even if there was no tree of knowledge, if they had not taken the tree of life, they would be dead. Right?
No.
That's why it's listed that way.
I would say no. I disagree.
How could they live without it? Because one's called the tree of life in the physical sense. How can you possibly, if you don't take of it, you can't have life?
Because the penalty for eating of the tree of knowledge was death. So that implies that if they had not eaten of the tree of knowledge, they would not have died.
Okay. However, if they had not eaten or would not eat of the tree of life either, what would the scenario be? Why have tree of life?
Well, hold on a minute.
Okay.
I know it's an interesting debate. And I do question, there wouldn't be a value. A tree of life would have no value if they lived forever anyway. But on the other flip side, to me at least, is that it has been commonly believed that death itself, like the concept of dying, is something that was produced in the idea of the tree of knowledge being eaten. But I also question, what if, for example, he didn't eat the tree of knowledge, but Adam walked up or climbed up a mountain and fell off? Could he hit the ground and not die, or would he not hit the ground? And same principles, if he accidentally stepped on a bug, does the bug die or not? If he's walking around, either angels are surrounding him continually, preventing from an injury, because injuries can cause infection and death too. And I question that too. But as opposed to eating life, it is an interesting question. I know that the concept of when you ate the tree of knowledge, it introduced the penalty of death for something versus an accidental death, which may be different.
Okay.
Well, the one thing I was thinking is, doesn't it say later that they had to guard the way to the tree of life because they would then take and eat of it and then live forever?
So, let me ask you we're doing a very physical talking here, right? Yeah.
What about the population? We overpopulated this earth a long time ago.
Yeah, that comes a little later. Last week, remember what we read there, what Yahshua said about a tree? That you must make the tree produce good. If the tree is producing both good and bad, what's going to happen to it? An axe is going to come down against it. And so when we look at this thing, and he's saying that you and I, any man, any human being, can make the tree, the things that we bring forth as fruit, can be what? Can we make it good? That's a scenario. We're seeing a picture here. We're not seeing an apple and an orange and a cherry tree. Yes.
Can a sinner be turned to good?
Right.
If a sinner can repent, say, "Oops, I screwed up. I'm sorry."
Then he's removing or cutting away from himself or herself that which is bad. How does he do that? By not doing it again. Remember, I told you the word knowledge, ancient Hebrew, Greek word of knowledge. Do you remember what the knowledge meant? Breaks up two words, right? One is to know something. The other one is to put it into practice. So when you cut away the bad, you're no longer going to put it into practice. You understand what I'm saying? So you cut it away. Now, the Messiah didn't say that it's his job to cut away. It's your job. It's my job. So our life, the two trees, are telling a symbol, a picture of how we actually should live. Remember that this second chapter is basically centered in on two main things. Number one, centered in on one big thing. What's it centered in on? Adam. God's not going to tell us in detail about a turtle. Doesn't go into detail showing us and how he made an amoeba. It's not an issue of whether he made and formed an apple or anything else. Just one thing. Centered in on man. Now, since he created man, which is in his image, what did he have in mind with that man?
To make a son, and that son would have sons. And that son would have sons.
No. That's not what it says in the second chapter.
To do the same thing he did. Work.
Yes. Where?
In the garden.
In the garden.
Which also means
so he created man to work in a place. Not anywhere, but in a certain place. Called Eden. Which means a pleasant word, pleasant sound. Remember, Eden itself didn't have anything either until God created Eden. I mean, God created the water, God created the plants, God created the trees. He created everything there, right? And he planted it or he formed it there, how do you want to call it? Now, the issue is, now we have Adam, and God now has put him into the garden, and he gave him only one rule. Really? Well, we'll find out. Actually, when you start thinking about Adam, he has one thing going for him that no human being ever had before. He didn't have to undo knowledge. He had no past. He has no record of how he'd figure out, well, I believed this before, and now I know it's wrong. Not for him. There was nothing there for him to remove from his life. He was formed perfect and good. The very next statement talks about him, of course, creating the garden and placing man there. If we put ourselves, I said last week, we put ourselves in Adam's position, what would we be observant of when the first time life was given to us? What would we see? Dirt. You see, Adama. And you're walking on Adama. Adama's walking on Adama. The dirt's walking on top of dirt. The ground's walking on top of the ground. But one ground is alive, the other ground is not. But he can't eat the ground, right? If he ate the ground, he's dead. Can't eat the ground. And so God made these wonderful trees in the garden, a lot of trees. We don't know how many they are, but it doesn't make a difference. God does not center in on the trees, just center in on the center of the garden. Now, as we keep on going, how would you explain Eve? How would you explain Eve?
Help me.
Help me. We're going to go through that a little bit today. Yes?
A guide, a spiritual guide to enhance
All right.
Adam's.
We'll see what it says. I always like doing this. Let's see, where was I at? Verse 18. We all kind of familiar with the phrase, and it's kind of fascinating. And he says, and Yahuwah Elohim said, not good that Adam should be alone. Interesting word. I will make him a help mate for him. All right. Fascinating, right? What is alone mean? Lavado. To be alone. It means to divide or separate. Wait a minute. How could he divide or separate with nothing there? Or to be solitary. To be by yourself. So basically, this word has to be, it's not good that he's by himself. Now it has the word help. I like that word help, right? Wonderful word help. Finally, he gets help. Did he need help? We'll have to find out if he did or not. Because how would he know he needed help? Right? So let's look at this. God said, okay, I'm going to have give him a help. Now, what help means to, in a sense, to surround or to protect or to aid? Oh. Surround and protect. Hey, that doesn't sound logical. Aid. That sounds good. Be an aid. Assistant. Ah, okay. So, have to just obey him, right? The next word is meet. Odd name. Odd terminology. In old English, right? You know what that means in Hebrew? I'll make a help opposite of him. I'll make a help that is a counterpart to him. So, did Adam need that? How would he find out if he needed that? What did he do? What did God have him do? Verse 19. So he tried it. We look back at this thing. It was not an afterthought with God. It's like telling God, said, now, by the way, Adam, I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm going to do. No, he didn't. He says, I'm going to have to make one for him. I'm going to have to show him something first. Yes, Bill.
He wasn't cooking up stuff himself. And, you know, going to work, fighting 9-to-5 and coming back and all that.
This is the sixth day of creation.
Yeah, but okay. I'm saying he's
placed in the garden, so he saw all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, but what did he really need?
What did he really need?
Help
okay. What happens if he was given a job? What was the job in the garden?
To tend.
Dress it and keep it.
Yeah.
What happens when you don't dress and keep grass or garden?
It gets out of hand.
It gets out of hand. Yeah. Okay. Simplicity of the matter, right?
But when he got done at the end of the day, he just reached up and takes something off the tree.
That's right. That's what he got. That was his payday.
So there was no cooking and all that involved. No house cleaning. What?
No.
What?
Seemed like he had a pretty easy, queasy job.
I mean, I'm not putting it down. I'm just wondering
Unless, of course,
why he did need it.
Now, remember, out of this garden, we don't know how big it was. We think kind of small. Four giant rivers came out of it. Oh, that must have been a very large territory for that much river to come out of there. So we don't know how tall Adam was. We don't know if he was a 5'3" or a 12-foot man. We don't know how tall he was. Right? He was extremely good physical condition. All right? We don't know his height. I'm using those exaggerations to a far point because sometimes we label what Adam looked like according to how we see people today. That's basically, you know. And sometimes we do see giants, you know, basketball players way up there. So let's continue here to verse 19. And out of the ground, Elohim, Yahweh Elohim, formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air and brought them to Adam, or Adam was brought to them, to see what he, Adam, would call them. Whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. Oh, that's interesting. First, his job was to do what? Tend the garden. Now, he's got another job. All these animals. Go ahead.
If you've ever lived on a farm, and you've dealt with farm animals, and planting the garden, and watering, and harvesting, and picking it all, you can do all that, or you can cook or process what you just picked, but you do not have enough hours in the day, every day, to do all of it. It works better if you have one person that takes care of one end of the processing and one person to do the producing. It sounds easy to go, you know, to work all day and then pick an apple off and that's dinner. After a while, you want something hot to eat, and it's really a two-person job.
Okay, but right now, we're just looking at what we're seeing. So what is it that Elohim was trying to embed into Adam when he had Adam do this? What was he trying to show Adam? God is a show-and-tell person. Yes.
Well, I think Bill's question actually brings up a very important point about what I think you might be trying to get at, is that nowadays, that's kind of, well, the wife's supposed to keep house and cook and clean.
Right.
Well, Adam didn't even have a house to keep, and he didn't have a 9-to-5-hour job, so he didn't necessarily need somebody to clean up after him either, and he had enough time to cook his own meals. So what did God mean that he needed help with?
Do you, okay, good. Duran?
Yes, it says that he had a helper corresponding to him. And if the man is worthy, the woman will be a helper. If he is unworthy, she will be against him. And many have noted that the ideal marriage is not necessarily one of total agreement in all matters. Often it is the wife's responsibility to oppose her husband and prevent him from acting rashly, or to help him achieve a common course by questioning, criticizing, and discussing. Thus, the verse means literally that there are times a wife can best be a helper by being against him.
Is that what God was showing Adam? Question? I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Is that what God was showing Adam? Yes, Bill.
It says there that the father said it's not good for man to be alone. So that's good enough for me. He knew down the line that we would need help.
Okay, so that's good enough for you, right? So what was Adam thinking when he finished naming all the animals and seeing what they did in that short period of time? What did he recognize? What did he notice?
That there was two of a kind and he was alone.
Okay. Before we go on, I want to make one statement because it's very important in chapter 3. Go ahead, Daniel.
Well, I don't know for certain, but assuming he also named the bugs as well. Bees, they are community.
Right.
They're colonies. They help one another grow. They help build, of course, all the various plants have you pollinated too. So I imagine God made a whole bunch of bugs also to do their work. If he noticed or watched and observed them, which he would have done anyway, that's what his job was, observe and see what's going on. He would say, okay, there are communities, there are herds and some animals,
right,
but they work together and build something. Adam can tend a garden. He can take care of the animals, whatever he needs to do. But can he build also? I would question he could not build.
Right.
He has no one to help him with, to build anything with or build anything for.
Now, there are three. It's very important to look at this verse for just a moment, if you don't mind. Adam gave names to all the cattle, one type of species, and all the fowl, another kind doing something different, and to the beast, three. Do you notice that? Now, cattle, what do you think the word cattle means? He's mute. They don't talk. They don't make noise. They're kind of like cattle. What cat? What? How many cattle? How often have you walked out and what does the cow do? What does a steer do? What does a bull do? What does sheep do? They make noise. That's all they do. And they don't know what's happening around about them, right? But they don't know if they're going to be for dinner tonight, dude. But, you know, so, and the other one is fowl. It's anything that flies in the air. Now, he talked about bee. It's one of those things that flies in the air. And the last one is the beast. And the beast is connected in a certain area. Where is the beast connected to? The field, not in the garden. This is Richard Age's personal opinion. I do not see any of these three creatures, three created things, ever being within the garden that had a border all around it, and no one there couldn't enter in because it had a guard around it, and there's only one entranceway to it, right? So it's very important to know that it's in the field. It's a different Hebrew word than Adam or Adama. It means an open, flat area, like a meadow or a forest area, anything. It's out there in the field. Animals or beast that lives out there, that's not a cattle, and it's not a fowl. It's a different kind of a creature. And we know what that means, I hope. Keep that in mind, because chapter 3 is very important when we get into chapter 3. Now, let's go to verse 21. Now, I know we are humans, right? I know after I get working and I get tired, I need to take and I need to get some sleep, right? So Adam was so exhausted, so bushed, doing all that, he needed to take a nap. That's not what it says, though, does it? What does it say? God put it upon him, the Lord, Yahweh, Elohim, put him to sleep. And it says a deep one. So he went under the knife. It was a good knife, though. No blood. And it says, very interesting now, and he took, right? He took a chad of his ribs. He took a chad of his ribs and closed it up, the flesh indeed thereof. Now, the word rib, what do you think that word means in Hebrew? It's a simple word. That which has curvature. Why it's called ribs? Because ribs are the only bone that has complete curvature protecting two major things, right? The heart itself and the lungs, right? So that's why it says it took it from one of his ribs, because the word is curved, a curved bone, one that's curves. I know a finger, no, it's a joint, and the joints make it turn, but a rib is actually one that's curved, built in a circular or semicircular pattern. And so he took it from one of his sides, and what happened? Verse 22. And the rib, which Elohim had taken from man, made he a woman and brought him to the man. What did Adam say? Now remember, he had not taken the knowledge of the tree of knowledge yet. So let's keep our mind just where it's supposed to be for a moment, okay? If you don't mind. So now we have here, he sees something for the first time. What did he see now? Something that is opposite of him, right? Something that is in, not defiance, but that's not how the word in Hebrew refers to. Someone that is a counterbalance to him. Now he's found something that is meet for him, equal for him. And it's like him. This one can talk like he talks. This has got a complete vocabulary. Knowing how words are said, she had the brain that rethinks and sees. She saw her. She knew who the Creator was. Like Adam knew who the Creator was. Oh, wow. They saw. They both saw together. And he says, this is really great. And says it was taken from a man, Isha. It's actually in Hebrew. Therefore, it's a man. Now, this is verse 24. Very fascinating. This is not a law that Adam came up with. Right? Adam didn't spurt out the first law. There was no way the body there. There's no children. Right? They had no children at this point in time. And he must now do something. What must he do? Verse 24. What does it say he do? What does he do? What is she supposed to do? Doesn't say, does it? There's an older, when I was in the world by Church of God many years ago, there was an elderly lady, lived in Lake County. Wonderful and one smart lady. I mean, she had clever words, one-liners all over the place. And if you couldn't keep up with her, she'd just keep on going. And she said, once a daughter, always a daughter. Once a son until he gets married. That's it. He's gone. He is no longer with mama anymore. He's no longer with daddy anymore. He's gone. You don't call him. He's not a son now. He's a man who has a family. A man who has the children. Man now. He now is to handle and do his job. Right? It's a very fascinating statement. Now, the last verse, which I'm not going to explain to you today. I'll explain it to you more in detail next week. Because next week I'm going to start chapter 3 with this particular verse. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. That I'll explain next week. So, here we are. As we see a picture here in the second chapter, we see a man that God had called Adam. He established vocabulary. Right? He established it. Whatever you call it, that's what it is. So he established vocabulary. He was a science, this observation. This is what it is. That's the fact. That's what it is. Scientist. You know? We sometimes look that Adam didn't have it all together. That because he didn't have the other part, that is the woman, he didn't get the picture. Right? Sometimes we have to look and see that Adam was not created by mistake. But I want to ask you a question. Apostle Paul said something very interesting. It's in the 8th chapter of Romans. Now we're talking the 8th day. Right? This chapter talks about the 8th day. Right? Yes or no? Well, you don't have to go that way. At least talk about creation of man. On Romans, remember this is Apostle Paul. Don't have to accept him, but I just want to read what he has to say. I find this man very fascinating in his writings. The 8th chapter. Try to get there quickly. Verse 20. Romans, the 8th chapter, verse 20. Now, either Paul doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's telling us something we need to understand. We're talking about Adam before Eve was on the scene. For the creation was subject to futility, subject to vanity, subject to worthlessness. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And it was created subject to vanity. Subject to what? Futility. Not by its own will, but by Him who made it subject to something else at the same time. Now, that may be hard to understand a little bit. I quoted the first verse, chapter 1, verse 1. All right? And now we're here in the second chapter. And here we're talking about a man who's made from dirt. When he was made from dirt, was he subject to vanity? Was he subject to futility? Was he subject to something? According to Paul, yes. You say, well, that was only afterwards. Well, that's not what it says. I'm looking at this from a realistic point of view, and I'm saying God had something else in mind. Far greater than any of us can imagine. And so, what else was Adam subject to? Hope. Okay. In the book of Hebrews, it talks about hope, right? What is hope? Evidence of what? Not seen. Oh, really? Was Adam, did he have hope for something he couldn't see? We say, of course not. Adam didn't have faith. He didn't have hope. He had everything. Why was he hoping for? You know? But we have this picture, this pattern of going through and God showing him the other creatures on the earth. And something was missing within him. And now there's hope. Did Adam actually was caught off guard? Some of you may think he was unaware, didn't know what was going to happen. Myself, my personal opinion, and only my personal opinion, I think God said, you know, I am going to make a helpmate for you. I'll put you to sleep. And it's just come from you. He had hope. He had a hope. Subject to fertility, subject to nothingness, now he's going to have something that God promised him. It's a matter of believing God. Is that not true? See, sometimes we don't think that Adam actually had to learn to believe God as we've had to learn to believe God, because Adam already knew, not had to believe anymore, because he never had a trouble with his belief. But it doesn't really say that. It's subject to something. He's subject to hope. So what was he hoping for? I think he was hoping for a counterpart. Like all the other animals. I think he was hoping that God would grant him the opposite of himself. My personal belief. Don't have to buy it. But when Apostle Paul said that, I had to stop and think. Wow. Yeah, I think he was subject to something that was had any value, and then he got something. Yes.
Well, if you think about it this way, I mean, how would eating from the tree of knowledge of good and bad have been a temptation for him if he already had all knowledge? The fact that they wanted that knowledge, they knew that they, although that they were very intelligent, that there were things they did not know. So, of course, that tree would have been a temptation. So the idea that he was all knowledgeable, that wouldn't make sense to me.
Correct. But this is not, the tree of knowledge has two kinds of fruit on it. right? The other kind of knowledge that he was getting from the Creator had another kind of fruit on it. He was getting knowledge from God, the Creator of heaven and earth. He'd get information from God, the most wonderful food he could possibly have. He had the best teacher in the face of the earth, had the best tutor, and everything else. But there was something about the terminology of that which is not good and that which is good. A tree, symbolistically picturing, you, Adam, would have to make a choice. You remember the book of, I think it's in Romans, that even in all the texts, they don't blame the woman. They blame Adam, right? God said there's a first Adam and a second Adam. He didn't say there's a first woman and a second woman. There's a first Adam and a second Adam. Yes.
Although the Torah wasn't written yet, had she alone been the one who screwed up? Adam can overwrite and cover up her screw-ups, and her sin is null and void. And God would have said, deal. That's what the Torah says.
Yeah,
it would have worked. So whether or not, it's not that it's her fault, it's Adam who didn't say, Eve, you made a mistake, it's okay, it's all gone.
Yeah.
He should have done that.
So, as we look at this thing, we talk about Eve now for just a moment. What kind of woman do you think she was? A lot of male chauvinist pigs will tell you exactly what they think that woman was. A dumb broad. That was their terminology they would use. But that's not true, is it? She was at the same level as Adam himself. Now, the Word of God says through Apostle Paul, that's where we get to chapter 3, we won't get to today, that Adam was deceived. Is that what it says? Oh, what does it say? He wasn't deceived. Now we had to figure out, when we get to the third chapter, we'll see how the deception worked. But nonetheless, what kind of woman was she? Now, just stop and think. I'm asking a simple question here. Is it hard to understand that simple question? She was created to be something. What was she created to be? Right. Quote, help mate, is it Old English? Do you think she did her job? So, it's like, maybe it's like Proverbs 31. Very productive. Intelligent woman. She was not dumb. Any more than Adam was dumb. Now Adam made a terrible mistake. Was Eve's mistake greater than Adam's? No, Adam's mistake was greater than hers. When you are subject, when more is expected from you, what happens? You will be beat with many stripes. If you don't know, what will happen to you? You'll be beat with fewer stripes. Keep that in mind. Yes?
This is just an assumption. I'd like to get this cleared up in my own mind here. Eve being the opposite, eats of the fruit, and it was that perhaps his observation, she didn't die. God said death would happen. Maybe he didn't know or know what it was, I don't know, but because she didn't...
Now, when we get to the third chapter, the very important phrase that is used in the third chapter, which I want to expound on it next week. It's very important to know that certain phrases, and the reason why it's vital is because it helps us to understand something. All right? I'll get that next week's question, all right? Now, was Adam's, I will call it knowledge, of not only creation, but as a creator, was it growing? Was it getting bigger? Was it enlarging? Well, yeah. This is my thinking, okay? When he saw where he was placed, my mindset would be, wow, this is a fantastic place. And then when all the animals and the fowl and the three different kinds came to him, and he saw them all, what do you think went through his head? Oh, it's a boring job. I want another job. No, he was awestruck with the creation, awestruck with his creator, and his creator was right there bringing the animals to him for him to observe and see what they do. And the creator said, whatever you call them, that's what they will be. God didn't call a dog a dog. Man did. Then God just used the word. Okay, so that's a dog. I'll call a dog. So a dog is a dog. Okay. What does a dog do? Barks. Barks, bark, 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 bark. I don't know. But anyway, just to let you know that, I said one thing that Adam didn't have, he didn't have any of that past history of evolution. He had to fight about growing up from babyhood all the way up. He didn't have to fight mama saying no, 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 and getting swatted. He didn't have to go through that, right? He didn't have any of that in his past. He didn't have any, quote, damage from the raising up of great-grandma, great-grandpa, great-great-grandma, great-great. He didn't have a history behind him of, oh, how bad his ancestries were or how fantastic they were. He doesn't have none of that, right? And so when I look at Adam, I saw him see the woman. I think he was just downright awestruck. Did he lack belief? No. He didn't have any doubt. He knew where he came from. He knew he came from the dirt. He knew who put him together. He even knew what his name was. Yes.
Well, if I misread this, we already have the Shabbat already established. So on the seventh day, even Adam now is resting and being astonished and awe with his creation.
Well, right now we're in the second chapter, which has to do with the sixth day of creation. That's where I'm at right now. The second chapter is talking about the sixth day of creation. All right, he's still creating things. Here, this is the man's last mom. It's not a secondary story. Okay, otherwise, the first chapter's lying, or the second chapter's lying. You understand what I'm saying? Now, in the second chapter, he shows us the detail of what he did on the sixth day, only on one issue, man. Otherwise, he made man well after the sixth day. That doesn't make sense, because something's lying to us. So what I'm saying to you, and no one has to accept this thing, but when I see the second chapter, it's not contradicting or going against what the first chapter is. We have to visualize, center ourselves in on, he's creating Adam here. We know from the first chapter it was on the sixth day. So is the second chapter talking about day 600, 400 billion years later? No, it's talking about the very same day, where all the animals were created on the sixth day. The beasts in the field were created on the sixth day. The fowl of the air were created on the fifth day. Right? So we're seeing, he's seeing things that already had created before Adam was created. So he has no doubt in his mind, no doubt that there is a God. How could he doubt there is a God? There is God. Formed him. There he is. He said, hi. I made you. By the way, you look like me. I do? Yeah, here. Look at the water. Oh, wow! Yeah, I do look like you. I'm being funny. Okay, I'm being silly. But do you understand what I'm saying? No, and the creature that God created looked like God. Correct? That's what the scripture says. So I'm looking here at Adam, one of the most brilliant men probably that ever walked the earth, but his legacy isn't how brilliant he was. His legacy is sin, right? His legacy is death. What does God see in Adam? Death? Pay attention when we get in the third chapter. I put a nutshell. Did God continue talking with Adam after he kicked him out? Yeah. Did God continue talking with Eve after he kicked her out? Yeah. Has God continued talking with humanity since the humanity had been kicked out? The answer is yes. So let me ask you a question. Are you subject to hope? Are you subject to hope? There's death all around you. There's death in your life. Things are going to die. It don't last. But the Messiah said something very, very interesting, which I can understand better now than ever, even during the time we read about Adam and Eve. Those who seek to save their life, what will happen? They will lose it. What happens to those who lose their life for his sake? What happens to that? They save it. Now, keep those phrases in mind. Keep that thought in mind. Because I'm going to introduce another approach to the third chapter, where it involves you and me, as it involved Adam and Eve. Okay? Any questions? Any thoughts? Yes.
I'm going to feel sheepish after this, but I'm looking here in verse 27, chapter 1, where God made man in his own image. Then over chapter 2, verse 7, then he breathed the breath of life into him and became a living soul. So, I mean, it looks like there's the seventh day has already happened, and then Adam is...
Yeah, but it's not. The Bible's not written in chronological order. It has never been written in chronological order. There is always written in, this is a concept, another concept, another concept, and he brings another one way over here from past history and brings together all of them to look like the same time. There, in the book of Numbers, there is a story that took place well after his death by 400 years. And it's written in the book of Deuteronomy. Because there's a story here, here, and here. There's a parallel. That's like that one. And that's just like this one over here. What's the message? What's the message? What's the message? And that's when we look at the Bible, we start looking at the Torah, we start looking at Genesis, we start seeing what is the message? What is the thought? God does not work on time. He doesn't work on time schedule at all. He only works on concepts. This is the situation. This is the picture. There's another picture over here, by the way. Did you notice the picture and the picture and the picture? Daniel has been going through an awful lot about that in relationship to the prophets. And you would never recognize that there are stories that are related to the Messiah in any way, shape, or form. You wouldn't even recognize a story that relates to anything about the book of Revelations to, let's say, the book of Isaiah. You know, what? There's no connection. But there's a story here, and all of a sudden it's over here. It's also same picture, same identical plan, same identical pattern. God works on patterns. He works on he has a method to his creation and how he created things. So when we go into chapter 2, we're seeing something that we just... Chapter 1 says it's completed, it's over with, yeah, and the seventh day came, Okay, let's... Oh, then what happened after? We think in a chronological order. And he stops. It's totally stopped right there. After the seventh day, it stopped. That thought came to an end. Seven completes a thought. Seven completes a story. Seven completes the end, the completing the thing. Now we're going to look into those things that he's going to show us what he wants us to see in the very first chapter. And on the second chapter, he's bringing in, zeroing in right on to Adam. Because the birds already been created. The cattle's already been created. The fowl there been created. Beasts of the field been created, brother. And now, the man is the last thing he creates. Very last thing he does. Now my personal opinion, I don't think Adam was made 1 minute before sunset. I think he probably made it at sunrise on the sixth day. And had it all that time to learn and pick up things. Unlike us, he didn't get tired. He wasn't exhausted. Didn't have a hard day work, you know. Didn't have to face the frustrations of cars or boss or, you know, fellow worker. It's all that didn't he had none of that stuff. He had the one person that was with him all the time was whom? Yeah, the Creator. This is what I'm telling you, what I see in the second chapter. It's not a different story. It's not a story that says, oh, it's an afterthought. No, it continues on with it in a sense of I'm zero in on one thing. Now, what we don't have here, and we'll get into chapter 3, a time within the story. It doesn't matter what time. It doesn't matter whether it took them 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, or 40 years. It doesn't tell us. It doesn't matter. What is the pattern? The knowledge of tree is listed in chapter 2. The tree of life is listed. And now it's expanded in greater detail of the results thereof in the third chapter.